Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 202. We're back. We are live on a Tuesday evening to continue our positional previews for the 2025 fantasy baseball season with the first base position. Before we get to that and so much more fun that I'm sure my co-host has in store for the Giants today, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on the Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. Happy New Year, my good buddy. I know we pre-recorded some shows last week while I was down in Arizona, but this is our first live show of 2025. So it's good to be back in the saddle. Had a good time down in the desert. Dobson Ranch, paid a little visit to the ranch last Monday. Played a round of 18. Checked out their new mini golf setup that Dobson Ranch has down there, and it was things are good. Vibes are good at Dobson Ranch. So we are very much looking forward to November 6th, 2025, back at the ranch for the Bubba and the Bloom Invitational. So had a good week off. Really appreciate the New Year's resolution show feedback. That was pretty cool seeing that air, and then and got a number of new Patreon Discord folks that signed up. I was honestly pretty blown away by the feedback that we got on that one. So glad you all enjoyed that one. We don't do too many off-topic shows, but it was good to hear that when I was away. It was a good way to ring in the new year. So how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been fun to miss out on the Dobson. Looking forward to that. Glad things are going well. When you told me you checked in that they had a new mini golf setup behind the pro shop and some other things, I'm like, man, they just keep getting better and better. It just gets better and better.
There were like 100 people at the little mini golf slash. It's right next to the driving range, right behind the clubhouse. It was a little dicey. A few noons in, and you're going through the turn, and there's like driving a golf cart, kids running around and stuff. It's a little shaky, but we're good.
Yeah, because you do that when you finish nine. You got the bar for the noons. You have to drive behind the
drive through the.
Yeah, that's that can get tight.
A little bit, and then you got to go back through after 18. So,
yep, beautiful. No one was injured. I'm looking forward to it. It might be a longer stint this time to really take it all in next time we go. But that is a ways away. But of course, we can still be excited about that. What else we should be excited for is on the New Year's resolution show. For those that maybe have not listened, we talked about the 2025 Bubba and the Bloom Listener Leagues. They're coming back. We're sticking with the auctions. 15-team, $50 entries. Ryan and I will be in one league each. In order to get into the league, you need to become a Patreon member. If you are a paid Patreon member, you're guaranteed a slot. If you are a free Patreon member, which still is awesome, we'll take it. Come join the party. Free member. You get on the list, and you have a chance to get in. We should have everybody in, I'd imagine. But if the numbers don't dictate, there will be a drawing or something. We'll figure that out. But it's 15-team league, so every 15 people that sign up, we start a new league. Right now, I think, Ryan, you said we're looking like we're getting close to six leagues already after four last year, which is pretty sweet. And obviously, that can keep growing. The more, the merrier in that regard. If you have any more questions, that's just like the cliff notes of what the leagues are. We talked about them in depth on the resolution show. But we have something new, Ryan.
Some breaking cool news, stuff, exciting news. Yes.
Which comes along with the listener leagues. Now, again, we said $50 entries. Cash prizes are staying the same. First, second, and third get paid out. You're still getting your money if you do well in the league. That'll not change. We had an overall prize last year. We still have an overall prize this year. This is where things get real fun. All right. Thanks to Baseball HQ, the wonderful people over there, they approached us because they're awesome people and they wanted to take part in like helping with the Bubba and the Bloom listener leagues. So there's prizes from Baseball HQ if you play in the listener leagues. If you finish second in your league, your individual league, we're not talking overall yet, just finish second in your league, you win a 2026 Baseball HQ draft prep subscription, full site access from mid-January through April. So Ryan, run people through what that sounds. It seems pretty basic, but explain to everybody real quick what that entails.
That's what it is. Basically a full Baseball HQ subscription during draft season and then the first month of the season. So you get a taste of our in-season content. And so it's not just the content, it's the projections, the tools, custom draft guide, all that stuff. You are basically a full HQ subscriber for that peak season. Roughly mid-January is when it starts. And then again, ends after April.
And then the league winner in each individual league. Still not talking overall yet. It's just the league. If you win your league, besides your cash payout, which you will get, Baseball HQ is giving each league winner a full year subscription to Baseball HQ, which is pretty
awesome.
Yep. Awesome. Now where things get really cool, if that wasn't cool enough. The overall winner, we have the overall prize, folks. The overall winner, courtesy of Baseball HQ, free registration to First Pitch Arizona 2025. They're giving out a free registration, which is pretty sweet. It's actually cost more than an autographed jersey for most people not named Shohei Ohtani. So that's an awesome gesture on their part. Awesome people. If you have anything more to add on that, Ryan, it's awesome to kind of partner up with them on this, helping us out with the prizes, and hopefully more and more people get to enjoy Baseball HQ the way we do.
Yeah, for sure. Super, I mean, we both write for the site. I've written for the site for, I mean, it's how I got into the industry. So super, super grateful to Ray and Brent for reaching out and having us all be able to kind of come together and come up with this. So I think that kind of spices up the listener leagues just a little bit more. If folks were kind of on the fence, I think we've got quite a package for you all. In terms of what you can win. And I mean, again, the leagues are super fun, even if you don't win or whatever. Like it's a way to do auction leagues. It's a low price point, and I think we've sweetened the pot just a little bit thanks to the folks over at HQ. So super stoked to be able to kind of partner up with them, and very, again, appreciative of having them be involved in the listener league. And it sounds like one of our league winners from last year will not be in the listener leagues, because Brent is kind of running that show and with the prizes. So he's removing himself from consideration of the league. So that maybe that makes things a little bit easier. He won our league. So I was there.
Every time I've been in a league with Brent, he has taken me to school. So it's it breaks my heart, because I love having him in there, but totally get it as well. The other thing I'll mention about the listener leagues, and again, we talked about all this in depth on the Resolution Show episode 200, is you have to be a listener, because we do not promote this on social media. We don't promote it anywhere. The only place to get this information, unless you guys start pirating this somewhere, which I guess it's pretty cool in a weird regard, you're only getting you got to be here to get that info. Last year, we filled four leagues only talking about it here. We don't tweet it out anywhere, nothing like that. So it's a kind of a thank you for it's a real listener league. You guys are here. You're the listeners. So we want to hang out with you guys and have some fun drafting. So that's the perks, auction, all that good stuff. And we'll see where it goes from there. Real quick, we got some Happy New Year's in here. Tom DeCola saying Happy New Year's. Our buddy Scott Burks with the Happy New Year's. Gialdi, our buddy, says he's watched the Catcher episode several times. Never gets old. Much obliged. Well, thank you.
Whoa, kind sir.
This would be amazing, Bloom, but our buddy Michael Cicchini says the Bubba and the Bloom auction will have a $10,000 overall within 2 years at this rate. And if that's the case, I'm going to be asking for a lot of things from certain people, but that's pretty awesome if that takes the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, you mentioned we've pretty much already filled four leagues, which is what we did last year. So I would think we get at least six. And timing wise, we're pretty much setting aside most of the month of January for signups. And then we will reach out end of the month for surveys on preferences for dates and times and that sort of thing. So, get in touch with us if you're interested.
Yep, let us know. And if you can't message us on social media, or email bubbabloompod@gmail.com. You can get hold of us there as well. The other thing I want to mention, again, not every show will be a full advertisement about what we do. And as Gialdi says, $50 auction is amazing to get people interested in the format. That's the goal. We had a lot of first-time NFBC players, first-time auction players last year, which was great. Even I had Mark Winoker on my Bench with Bubba show, and he's been doing big time auctions for a long time, and he says he loves the idea of getting people in at $50. He says we need more of that in the NFBC for all their formats. He's pumped to hear that as well, just to get your feet wet, see what you got. So hopefully it continues to grow. That's the point of this, is to make it accessible for everybody.
Yep.
We said we won't be full promotion all the time, but we still have to. It's kind of what we do. Before we start the first base preview, I want to let Bloom promote some stuff he's working on, because I always talk about how, like, I'm the caveman, he's the genius, and it's how we work together really well. And one thing about the Patreon, when we started planning for it, what we could bring to the table, all these things, a lot of it was going to be circled around Ryan's brain and building, I call them sheets and things, but they're that's more just a sarcastic, let's joke about it stuff. He's always doing things, and he's taking questions and comments from our Discord to enhance them even. What's the latest thing you got going, Ryan? Because you dropped it in the Discord a day or two ago, and it's pretty freaking awesome.
Got a little beta version of it out that, yeah, that I'm trying to get feedback from the folks in the Discord. Just to, again, these tools are for you guys. But what it is a projection aggregator combiner that's going to take all the Fangraphs projections, Steamer and the Bat at least, and kind of combine all those. That's kind of the common way that a lot of folks that look at projections do this, is kind of combine a couple projection systems into one. And then what this tool is going to do is it's converting that into dollar values, comparing it to ADP, seeing where the differences are, and kind of color coding all that for you to kind of pull up one sheet and see all that in one spot. You can do things like, if you don't agree with the projection, for example, Steamer, I think, has Ronald Acuna for like 580 plate appearances this year. If you knock him down to 500, which you can do in the sheet, you can instantly kind of see, okay, where does that, what's that new dollar value look like if I give him 500 plate appearances? And you can adjust even the projection itself. So it'll be something that's updated daily with Fangraphs. So this is all automated. So I pull the projections out of Fangraphs and display it for you all kind of in one package. It's something I use, and I figure if I use it and I find it helpful, hopefully folks on the Patreon do as well. As Tom in the chat says, love that I split out the 15 and 12 team values. So yep, that's part of it. 12 5x5 and 15 team 5x5. There's also an underdog best ball component. We're going to be doing an underdog show probably later this month, talking about some of the strategies, maybe do a live draft, something. This tool is also combining all those projections and actually putting it into a file that you can upload into Underdog, and that's your rankings for your draft. So just a lot of cool stuff like that I've been in the lab working on for the off season content. I've already put out the team tracker tools, which
a lot I can even use. I love it.
Bubba types in the name and the drop down, and it all kind of works. So again, if Bubba can do it, I'm sure all of you out there can do it. So so again, we're just trying to, I mean, ultimately the Patreon's it's a vehicle for you all to support the show, and that, I mean, that has been super we're super grateful of that, but we also want to make it worth your while with Bubba's content, with my tools, and the Discord. That kind of that three-pronged approach is hopefully, again, making it worth your while to support us. So again, we definitely appreciate all the support you all have given us, and we will continue to work hard to make it worth your while.
And I will say, besides, I can't say enough, and people probably know that Ryan stuff is awesome. Like, it's just really cool to see, and the price point is very affordable compared to what you get that elsewhere. But he said he's been in the lab working on it. I started brainstorming other things and starting to get stuff going. Seeing all the floods come in of signups after the resolution definitely got me excited to put more stuff out. That's all I'm going to say. It's like you said, you support us. We're going to keep giving you guys as much as we can. So, yeah. Thank you is what I'm trying to say in that regard.
And just for clarity, the lab is just my unfinished basement. I'm down here.
You're looking at it right now if you're on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
It's a nice part of my unfinished basement. They're, you know, this side's a little different. But.
All right. Okay, you guys have probably heard enough. I should probably put a marker in the thing, but that's professional. Yeah,
the show does not actually start till 14 minutes in. But
let's get to it. First base preview. We knocked out the catchers already, like our buddy Gialdi said. That was a blast, as always, talking about the best position in the game. But now we head to first base, where, you know, years ago when we started, or maybe even later after we started, but first base used to be a juggernaut in fantasy. The elites were there. You had all these big-time power hitters. You still have some, but things have shifted year after year after year, and the depth of it is not quite what it once was, Ryan. So before we get started, what are we looking at on this board?
So we are looking at, similar to the catcher preview for folks viewing on YouTube, we are looking at the last 10 drafts of ADP for first base. So we're looking at the top 30 first basemen ordered by their average draft position in 5x5 leagues, and then combining that, overlaying that with Steamer projections that are publicly available on Fangraphs. And so I've got their batting average, home run, and stolen base projection all color-coded, so we can kind of see that top 30 and see where trends are going, where values lie, that sort of thing. So for me, a couple of things that stand out. Kind of your traditional first base, there's a good amount of power here. right? There are a number of 30 home run, 30 plus home run guys, especially on the left side of this sheet, which is the top 15. Batting average starts to fall off very quick because, again, typically your traditional first baseman are these big Jake Burgers who slug and don't really hit for average. So you've got, we'll talk about these top three, they are batting average assets. After that, there are not many batting average assets that hit for power, but also hit over like 250. So that was one thing that stood out to me. The last thing that stood out to me, and then I'll give you the floor, Bubba. There's some speed. There's not a ton of speed at first base, but if you look down the stolen base column, there's some green.
Relation to the position, of course.
In relation to the numbers. Position, correct. Yes. But you've got Bryce Harper projected for 10 steals, Freddie Freeman 11, Bellinger 12, Spencer Steer 15, Oldschmidt, Toglia, Luis Arias 8 or 9. You've got Luke Rayleigh, Nolan Schanuel 8 or 9. I feel like there's more opportunities to at least get some steals at first base. Josh Naylor was 7 than there have been in the past. So that was another kind of surprising thing, just looking at this position at a macro level, that stuck out to me was it's not a total dead spot for speed.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we were talking about before the show is the speed is probably one of the bigger standouts here, because other than that, average kind of dwindles. You got a few guys here and there, but they're guys that I usually just clown on as in every position they're eligible at. Power is probably the most consistent thing in reality at this position. It's not like elite power, but yeah, you're talking 15 plus home run guys almost throughout the entire projection. Obviously, a few examples don't fit, but most of them do in the top 30. That stands out with the steals, like you mentioned. So you still have some good three-ish category guys as you go down the ladder, but it is still a massive drop-off. We're seeing this at other positions as we get ready to do previews. Like, and obviously we'll be able to talk more about this when we do our pockets of ADP, because you can really get an idea on what positions and stats you want to look at. But so far, we're noticing that you're going to start picking your poisons at what positions you want to take early and which ones you're willing to wait on later. And I'm not sure if I'm comfortable waiting too long at first base. Like, there's some good corner infield options, but if I'm like in a 15 team league, some of these guys need to go early in my mind, but we'll see. Like, I know in the past, like last year, you're like, I want Freddie Freeman early for his average and these things, X, Y, and Z. Makes sense. I know in some of my early drafts, I've tried to get a top 10 guy in every draft. Doesn't always work out that way, but that's the initial thoughts I've had as I've been drafting and looking at the position, and the board kind of shakes out that way.
I feel like there's a somewhat of a soft middle to this. So it's kind of starting around like 120 with like Tristan Casas. So we'll probably disagree on Michael Toglia. We'll see. But I like some of the, so I certainly love the top three again, which we'll get into, Vlad, Harper, Freeman. I like some of the guys going around pick 100, Walker, Naylor, Bellinger, like those guys. And similar to other positions, I feel like there's a drop off around 200. Like we said that at the catcher position, looking at second base, that looks very similar as well. So maybe the takeaway is just don't draft any hitters after 200. I've heard outfield gets thin pretty quick too. So I don't know. I think kind of one of the goals of this episode is going to try and maybe we'll find some of those post 200 guys that are going to be useful at corner for us.
Yeah. All right, and before we just continue to banter about the board, let's talk players and get more information out of the board as we get going here. And currently, and we're using ADP from December 20th to January 6th, Draft Champions ADP, so it's the last 10 Draft Champions drafts as we record here. The number one first baseman off the board, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., with an ADP of 15. And Vladdy's coming off a big season, hit 323 second time, hitting over 300 in his career, 30 home runs, 103 RBIs, still showed great plate discipline. It's a guy that I've even slowly churned my appreciation for, especially in the OBP world where I had him in tout wars. I think it's just who he is. Like, I think people wanting 2021, that guy probably isn't coming back anytime soon, 48 home runs, and that the other ballparks could have helped. But you know, close to 30 home runs and a good batting average, definitely in play, I think, with Vladdy. So I get it. It's just weird seeing him above Harper and Freeman for the first time.
It is. The other thing with Vlad, the safety. Like, dude, over the last four seasons, the fewest number of plate appearances that Vlad has had is 682.
That's a good point.
In 2023. It was 697 last year. It was 706 in 2022, and then 698. Plays every single day, does not miss games. I think that is a skill, and that obviously has a ton of value. Some of the hard hit metrics for Vlad last season were some of the best of his career, ground ball rate notwithstanding. I think that's always going to be a thing with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But again, double-edged sword with the ground ball rate. It may not get him to 40-plus home runs, which I think he's good enough to get. We've obviously seen that version of Vlad before, but I think it also nearly locks in a 300 batting average. So if you can get 700 plate appearances of a 300 batting average, 30-plus home runs, and the runs in RBI that come with that, like I totally get taking Vlad at the wheel of a 15-teamer at the end of the first round. And again, the one of the biggest things with that is just the sheer like reliability that you get with Vlad. So.
Yep. Anybody can get hurt, but he's shown it for four straight years now of continually getting the job done. And weirdly enough, dude's going to be 26 this year.
That's crazy. I know. I saw that too, prepping for this. Like, I feel like Vlad's going to be 30, 31. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Like, because there's also some ceiling there. I agree with you. 2021 is not coming back, most likely. But he's done it before, and he's only 26. I'm not projecting that at all. I'm just saying that's at least remotely possible. I know there were some minor league parks and whatnot that season, that sort of thing. But like, yeah, you take all that safety, reliability, and you tack on the fact that he's 26. He's my number one first baseman. I have him higher than Harper and Freeman for those reasons.
If I have to throw any shade here, because if we need to nitpick at all, the supporting cast is atrocious in Toronto this year. That lineup is rough. He needs Bichette to bounce back, but like right now, roster resource is not the end all be all, but right now they have Will Wagner hitting cleanup. There are some serious that concerns. Can't be. There's like, I did the Toronto Blue Jays preview pod with Joe Arrico earlier today. And, to say that guy is salty about his team, and he's justifiable on a lot of it right about now, cause it is not pretty in that starting lineup. That would be my concern if you're talking counting stats compared to some of these other guys going behind him. That is a debate worth having that might sway someone one way or the other.
Okay. I'll give you that. It's a fair point. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Second first baseman off the board, ADP of 22 over the last 10 drafts, Bryce Harper. Now he's going to be 32 this year, which is nuts as well. But 30 home runs last year, 285 average, only seven steals. Steals were down, he's usually 11 to 13. It's not a massive drop, but was down. And the one thing that stood out to me looking at Harper the other day, he's really not a common 100 run or 100 RBI guy, yet he still goes so high compared to other guys that do provide a ton of runs and RBIs, if that makes sense. But he hits for average, hits for power. Good lineup, but again, it's tricky. Like I like Harper. I actually took Harper in my recent DC, he's just a guy. The more I look at him, I understand if people want to move on, but he's also very good. If that makes sense to anybody,
yeah. I mean, it's the opportunity cost. You're comparing him to a Vlad and Freddie Freeman. I should look at my first base rankings. I think I have Freeman Harper first, third.
By the way,
I have Freeman first.
Yep.
Oh Jesus, I'm gonna have to change that. Vlad first, Freeman
again.
Second.
We did these a long time ago, so yeah you probably change things.
But I do. I mean, it's a clear top three among Vlad, Harper, yes, Freeman. The projections that I'm looking at all have them very similar. So we're kind of, I don't want to say wasting our time picking these guys apart, but I mean, it does matter who you take in those first two rounds. I think Harper, like, you're not getting the batting average of a Vlad or Freeman, so that hurts. And like you said, the runs in RBI, like, yeah, oddly haven't been there for Bryce, but that's probably because the plate appearances haven't been there. I mean, there is some additional, I'm not sure if I call it injury risk with Harper, because it was TJ. And then I think he only missed like 10 or 12 games this past season. So I don't mark that too much against Bryce Harper, but you are getting some steals that you aren't getting with Vlad. So I prefer Vlad over Harper, but I can see taking Harper. I don't have any kind of major disagreements if you take Harper at first base. It's splitting hairs.
Yep. Third first baseman off the board, ADP of 23, one pick after Bryce Harper, is Freddie Freeman. Talking injuries, just had ankle surgery this offseason after the injury in the postseason, but knock on wood, should be fully recovered by spring training. Freeman comes with 22 home runs, .282 average, but saw 81 runs and 89 RBIs, much lower than the norm for Freddie, and only 9 steals after back-to-back double-digit steal seasons. Still very, very good. Still in a very, very good lineup, but did underperform a bit this past season. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you're ready to get back on board, and I am too. I still think he's, if healthy, one of the most consistent first base forces you can find in baseball.
I mean, one of the most consistent players like of all time. That's a take. But like in the forecaster this year, Ron Chandler, in his intro, looked at the number of players that have had current players that have had $25 plus seasons, which is roughly like top 40 seasons, maybe top 30 seasons. Freddie Freeman has done that 9 years in a row. He has done that 9 seasons in a row. Nobody else has done that over 7 years in a row. Only one other hitter has done that 25 plus home runs over 5 years in a row, and that's Trey Turner. So what you're buying, when I say Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is safe, like Freddie Freeman is like, I mean, safe. I try to think of like super safe, but it's getting late in the day. So
I'll keep it PG and we'll go super safe.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I just think like, and then you tack on everything else that's good about Freddie Freeman, the lineup, all that. I think the concern with Freddie Freeman, and this is why I think the ADP is as low as it's been, and that's, again, it's a 23 ADP, is yes, he's coming off a down year, but he's also going to be 35. So I think you have to ask yourself, was it just a down year and he bounces back, or was it a down year, he's 35, is that not going to bounce back, either kind of stay as is or start to decline as he gets into his mid to late 30s. So I think that's the only kind of reason for not taking Freddie Freeman, is you want to go younger there. But I think so much is locked in when you take Freddie Freeman that I guess he's my number two first baseman, but I have him right there with Vlad. I would rank him Vlad, Freeman, Harper.
Yeah, and he also missed a good amount of time because of his son's illness. So who knows where his headspace was as he was performing and whatnot. So
yeah.
There's some grains of salt that could be used in this one.
The first half, second half splits for Freddie Freeman were pretty drastic. Like only hit .264 in the second half. So you don't want to pin all that on, but it was a pretty brutal second half for Freddie Freeman personally. And I'm not worried really at all about the ankle injury. It was a freak thing. He got surgery to clean it up. Like I think he's okay there.
Yep, I'm with you on that as well. Fourth first baseman off the board, ADP of 38, is Matt Olson. Power, we know, is lights out awesome. Like, there's no denying that. Run production was down last year, but it was down for the entire Atlanta Braves as a whole. We still saw the plate discipline pretty much similar to what it's always been, but .247 average, drop back down. He's kind of been an every other year batting average guy. Olson, to me, outside of the consistency stuff, playing time wise, it's just there's so much volatility in his profile. He's either very, very good, or he just kind of, it's good, but not like great type guy, if that makes sense. So I usually just avoid Matt Olson to my detriment at times. But what's your thoughts on Matt Olson? Because I feel like I can get a similar player a few rounds later, potentially.
I mean, avoiding Olson has worked out for you 2 of the last 3 years. Right. They're very up and down. So, I mean, the pluses with Matt Olson, obviously, is the power, the plate appearances. I just talked about Vlad. His minimum plate appearances was .680 over the last 4 seasons. Olson's is .673. He's been above that every single season. He plays every single day. So there's that. I mean, yeah, what sets Olson apart from that top three is a major drop in batting average. Like the projection has him, what, .251? And that's pretty much right in line. That's the steamer projection. That's pretty much right in line with HQ. That said, like last year you were buying Matt Olson off a career year. Now you're buying the dip. And so, I mean, he could lead the majors in home runs again. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And you tack on the lineup that should get a lot better in Atlanta with all those plate appearances. Like I get the reason for taking Olson. At the end of the day, he's a little bit too close to like Freddie Freeman, where I think there are similar Matt Olsons that you can kind of piece together later at the position for cheap. So I am probably not taking much Matt Olson. I'm going to try to get one of those top three that we just talked about. If not, I'm going to dip a little bit later in the first base pool.
Yep. I'm with you as well. Next up, another guy I just keep passing on is Big Meat Pete the Polar Bear. Pete Alonso's got an ADP of 57. He's fifth off the board right now, but it's been a roller coaster ride in free agency for Pete Alonso right now and in recent success. Like, you can pencil in basically 34, 35 plus home runs every single season. That's great. Counting stats, runs and RBIs, not bad. It's that batting average. It's just, it like you said with Olsen, it's a massive separator compared to the guys up top, and you still got to pay a, you know, top four round value in a 15 team league, which makes it a little tricky. Now, if you are desperate for power, not many guys you can just pencil in for the home runs that you can pencil in Pete Alonso with, but there's a lot of other factors. And God forbid he joins the Angels or the Giants or whatever that he's rumored to be with. he's rumored with like 12 teams right now.
But if you want him with the Giants?
If it's a short-term deal, if it's short-term, I'm fine. I don't want any long-term Pete Alonso. But he's just another guy. It's a very good power profile with a lot of, I guess, overall concerns I've had with Pete since day one, similar to Matt Olson.
Yeah, this is where I struggle. I struggle with Pete Alonso here, because you could look at this one of two ways. You could make the argument that he is basically Matt Olson going 20 picks later. And so, I mean, that's one way to look at Pete Alonso. Another way to look at Pete Alonso is he is Christian Walker.
I just want to say, as a player 44 picks later, I have circled where I would take if I want Pete Alonso.
Yeah, so like that, I mean, and that's not really a point about Alonso. That's the point more. And then, so can you do then the transitive property and say freaking Christian Walker is Matt Olson? I don't know. Yeah, you could. Crazier things have happened. So for those reasons, I'm not taking Alonso at his price, but it's just weird. Like, first base is weird like that. And maybe that's just a Christian Walker is undervalued type of statement that I just made. But I was just looking at Alonso. Like, if things break right, he's going the same as a guy in the top 40, but if he's also going the same as someone going 100.
Yep. And as Dr. Dave likes to say, Christian Walker is still his favorite first base value. And Walker's been my favorite first baseman year in and year out. And he's up to one of his highest ADPs now, but it's still not high enough compared to the guys we just talked about, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, look at those Steamer projections that we have on the screen. They are basically the same exact projection for Alonso and Walker. So.
Yep, I'm with you there. The sixth first baseman off the board. Now, that's either a detriment to first base or just how good Salvador Perez has been. And we talked about Salvi in the catcher's preview, so we won't get too deep into that one. But, yeah, you got Salvi. He's sixth on here with an ADP of 76. He's first base catcher eligible. I have a hard time drafting him as my first baseman, but we talked about catchers. Like, catcher's okay. I get it if you're going early catcher.
And I was going to take Salvi off this list since we talked about on the catcher preview. So check that out if you want your Salvi Perez analysis. I left him on just to make the statement. This has been said a couple times on other Discord or other shows or whatever. But like, don't totally rule out in a fab league or in draft and hold using Salvador Perez as a first baseman if you have to. I wouldn't plan for it, but it's not the end of the world if you do. And especially like in draft and holds, I the one I'm in now, it's a 12 teamer. It's my first 12 team draft and hold I've ever done. I took Salvador Perez. I'm probably going to take an early third catcher just to have that flexibility. If I need to move Salvi to first base or corner, I can do that, because Salvador Perez from a projection standpoint to me looks the same as like Vinny P, which would put, he's still a top 10 first baseman. Ooh. So it's just nice. I would not draft Salvi. You're drafting him and playing him as a catcher. But again, even in fab leagues, like don't let that stop you from putting him at first base if you're in a bind. So that's really the only reason I kept Salvi on here, is just to make that point.
Nope, that's fair. And we should keep him on here because he's earned it. Seventh first baseman off the board is that previously mentioned Christian Walker, ADP of 101 right now. And talk about just penciling it in. Yeah, last year he got hurt for the first time, well, after two successful seasons, but still 26 home runs, hit 251. He's basically like a 245 to 255 hitter. I would be going with 30 plus home runs, counting stats, pretty darn productive. His OBP skills are good. Now he gets the Crawford Boxers in Houston. He says he's excited about the barbecue. Love it. That's a man out of my own heart right there in Houston. And that lineup, like we said, with Yiner Diaz at catcher, I'm still very optimistic on what they can do. So love Christian Walker.
Yeah, I feel like this ADP is going to rise. I think a bunch of folks are going to talk about Christian Walker and be like, this seems like one of the benefits of drafting early. And maybe some of this ADP is still from when he was a free agent, but also I don't really care. I think Christian Walker is still really good, and this is one of my favorite buys at first base. perfect park for him. It's not just the Crawford boxes. It's Christian Walker's batted ball profile. It's the 48% fly ball rate. That's huge. It's the 43% pull rate. So he pulls his fly balls. Like, that is perfect for Houston. So the projection has Walker at 32 home runs. Would not be surprised at all if he makes a run at 40. So I really like Christian Walker at this price.
Yep. Love me some Christian Walker. He's gone over the last 10 drafts, he's gone as high as 89. So going a little
that's
higher.
Cheap, but still, though. That's still steep, not bad. Dude. I mean, especially when you compare it to Olsen and Alonso.
I think the biggest reason, well, it shouldn't matter in the grand scheme of things. You're drafting a team. You see a lot of pitchers going in those rounds like 3, 4, 5. And so someone's got to give. And so the hitters kind of get pushed.
Okay.
That's my guess. Again, when we talk about our pockets of ADP, that'll make more sense probably. But that's where my brain shouldn't justify it. If you want the position, he's your dude. Like you said, Alonso, Olsen, why is he get the gap? But that's the only slight bit of reasoning I'll give to that situation.
Yeah.
All right. Josh Naylor is the 8th off the board. Identical 101 ADP as Christian Walker. Josh Naylor coming off 31 bombs, 108 RBIs with a .243 average in Cleveland, heads to the desert to Arizona. Another pretty good team, especially the top of the order, should be just fine for run productions from Naylor. I think we're drafting off a career year, though, folks. And trust me, the show has been pro big man, Josh Naylor. We love the big man, but you are paying a premium now. When we were getting him super late the last couple, especially 2 years ago, we were all over that DC value. I've had a hard time clicking that button. Even though I'm a Josh Naylor believer, I'm just still skeptical.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know, and a lot of smart people are still in on him. And again, I could be totally just, you know, trying to convince myself I'm wrong. And I don't know, but it just the massive increase in ADP for a guy coming off a career year just scares me.
Okay. I mean, so I'll buy kind of half of that regression argument. Like, he's not hitting 31 home runs again. I don't think the power is there for that. I get that. I also don't think he's hitting .243 again. Josh Naylor. It was a very low BABIP for Josh Naylor last year, especially compared to 2023. So which one do you believe? Probably somewhere in the middle. But like HQ, the forecaster is projecting Josh Naylor hit .265, which is a nice bump up from .243. The Diamondbacks lineup is pretty damn good. So I like that. I think Josh Naylor and the projections that I'm looking at have Josh Naylor as the fourth. And again, baking in that power pullback, neutralized somewhat by what we think should be a higher batting average, has Josh Naylor as the number 43 hitter off the board, and ADP, he's the 56th hitter being taken in draft. So the projections say Josh Naylor is still a value. I think the price tag's fine. I will still take Christian Walker over Josh Naylor, but if you need balance, I mean, Josh Naylor is more balanced. I mean, you get what you don't get in 30 plus home runs, a .270 batting average projection. I mean, that is pretty nice at a position where we're starting to not really get much not able to get much batting average. So I'm fine with Josh Naylor at this price. I'm probably not getting him because I'm taking Walker instead, but well, I think he's a fine plan B.
And you always like the guy going behind him anyways. But but so it's just, for me, it's, I guess I'm seeing 108 RBIs, first time over 100. Can he do that in Arizona? Yeah, he could. Like, that team is very good offensively, but I think Walker's got a higher ceiling in Houston personally on that one. Just, I don't know, grasping at straws. I prefer Walker. You said you prefer Walker as well. So that's why I probably just won't have much Naylor in this whole conversation.
I mean, that's the thing. So, like, I just pulled up while you were talking, and this is just not just Naylor, but it's just interesting. Like, buying in Ketel Marte that we'll talk about on the second base preview, buying someone off of what we all know is a career year. Like, Josh Naylor finished 38th last year in the Razzball Player Rater overall, and he's being taken 101. So, like, the market is baking in a lot of pullback, and I think it's a little bit too much. But it's just interesting to see how the market reacts to some of these guys coming off what we all say is a career year. Yeah.
What if I told you this? I told you Christian Walker's gone as high as 89 over the last 10. Josh Naylor's gone as high as 66.
Oh, didn't know Mama Naylor played NFBC.
Now, that's where things get a little too high for me. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
All right. The 9th first baseman off the board has a nice, friendly short porch in right field coming his way that got people very excited. Now, Cody Bellinger, ADP of 104. Cody Bellinger had 18 home runs last year with a .266 average after hitting 26 homers and stealing 20 bags, hitting .307 the year before. We've talked about the underlying metrics, not the greatest for a quote-unquote power hitter in Cody Bellinger. I've just been anti-Cody for a long time, and for the most part, it's worked out very well. I will admit the Yankee situation is enticing, but again, I'm probably just going to pass on this unless you want steals, because he is one of the few first basemen that steals quite a bit.
Still steals quite a bit. Somewhat depends where he hits in the lineup. True. If you're hitting in front of Aaron Judge, are you going to steal as much? I don't know.
He's projected to hit fifth right now, which could be interesting.
Which would be, yeah.
Because Volpe, Chisholm, Judge, Goldie, Belly.
Yeah, so might still get those steals. That's one kind of, we don't know how, you know, what those steals will look like. But he's been successful in the past. Stolen bases pretty much consistently around 80% stolen base success rate, which means it's a plus EV move, as the kids say. It makes sense to steal when you are that successful. So I like Bellinger. First base outfield eligibility will come in handy. This is, in general, this is a nice pocket. Christian Walker, Josh Naylor, Cody Bellinger. We're going to talk about Vinny P next. All going between 100 and 112. This is a place, if I don't get one of those top three first basemen, this is a place I'm going to like to shop at first base.
Yeah, and it's a very important pocket, and there's a reason they're all going together, because the drop-off begins quickly after there. Like, there's some guys,
but yes,
the drop-off begins. So people drafting go, okay, I want one of these four. It's time to get at it before you start making some tougher decisions in your draft room. You mentioned Vinny P, ADP of 112, 10th first baseman off the board. I'm a Vinny P fan. I'm very optimistic on Vinny P. 19 homers last year, 97 RBIs, 262 average, missed some time with his injury. Once again, that's the downside to Vinny P. Did come back for the postseason, though. That was a plus. Finished the year playing. Like to see that. It's just health. Can he put together a full season? Because if he plays a full season, we talked about, just look at the colors on this board. As you go down the board, this is one of the better batting average with power guys you're going to see, and then combined before
the last one. He's the last one.
I really like Vinny P. I think he is a very good batting average asset. That could be because, you know, near 40% ground ball rate with the 42% fly ball rate. So he does a little bit of both. He's going to be hitting. We talked about it with Salvi. We talked about it with other stuff. That top half or so of that Royals lineup is going to produce a lot of runs. And Vinny's going to be the cleanup man in that situation. So people like are pointing to the RBIs last year. I don't see how 100 RBIs is out of the question there. So I like Vinny P quite a bit. And it just comes down to, can you trust the health? And that is a valid question, because it's been that same shoulder situation 2 years in a row. But I like Vinny P quite a bit.
I do too. The contact quality took a nice step forward last season, and Vinny P did not sacrifice strikeouts at all to get there. So I love seeing that from someone with, I don't want to say limited MLB experience, but Vinny P has not, this was like his first full season in the big league. So I like to see that. The downside here is you are paying a price for Vinny P that he has never achieved before, right? So like, that's the downside. And that's one of the kind of tenets of Baseball HQ is I forget exactly what it is, but don't pay a price for someone who's never done that before. I totally botched that, but yeah, I hope you get what I'm saying. I just think that odds are good, given the skills that we've seen from Vinny P, that he can return value here. And I think we'll have a career year for all the reasons that you also mentioned. So, 554 plate appearances last year for Vinny P. He only missed the final month. He almost made it. He can do it. He's a Bills fan too. I like that.
Yeah. No, he's a Jets fan.
He is? I thought he was a Bills fan.
Diehard Jets fan. He's gone on about almost quitting the Jets now after the way things went. He's a Jets fan.
Yeah. Well, maybe he will be a
Bills tickets. Fan. Oh, yeah.
All right. Disregard. My non-baseball. My baseball analysis is faulty.
Spot on.
My non-baseball is even worse.
It's okay. He's not a Virginia Tech guy. I understand. You forget.
That's a compliment. It's a compliment.
All righty. Let's talk 11 through 20. As usual on these previews, we'll each pick two guys to talk about here. 11 through 20 got Spencer Steer, Jake Berger, Tristan Casas, Paul Goldschmidt, Michael Toglia, Luis Arraez, Yandy Diaz, CES, Ryan Mountcastle, and Michael Bush. Ryan, who is your first option here? Because there's a whole lot of red in this range.
Yeah, you took the, I think, only two good options here. So I, before I say my guy, you got in the dock and
hey, picked some good ones. I offered to give you some. I tried to play nice.
No complaints. I think so. Just looking at first base in general, so we just had those four guys: Walker, Naylor, Bellinger, Vinny P, who we all really like. There are three guys going here: Steer, Berger, Casas, all at 120, and then it's nothing until Goldschmidt 175, Toglia 184. So this, if you don't get somewhere, if you don't, and I don't even like Casas. I mean, I'll actually bring that up. I put Yandy Diaz on the sheet, but I will say Tristan Casas is, if we're going to kind of switch it up and not talk about targets, but also fades, Tristan Casas, I think, is my biggest fade at first base. I just think we've really only seen a half season of Tristan Casas being good. There are major injury concerns based on what we saw and did not see from him last year. And for some reason, and maybe just rumors are rumors, Boston seems obsessed with trying to move Tristan Casas. And maybe that's because they want to put Devers at first base and they're flexible there. But that also doesn't give me the warm and fuzzy. So instead of naming Yandy Diaz as a potential target, which I don't firmly believe in, I like him at 217. I'll say stay away from Tristan Casas at 122 as the player I will highlight from this group.
I like that. I like that take. The power is legit, but how much do we get to see of him? Where's he going to be? Million questions. I think the skills are great. Uncle Ted says Casas is a beast. He could be. Could be. Depends on where he's playing and what else goes on there. And so an issue I've just steered clear on, like you mentioned. My first guy, the Berger man himself, just supersize it. Jake Berger heads to Texas. And this is some big boy stuff here for Berger. And a guy did you do it? Yes, there it is, the Bubba Burger.
I grew up on these things, man. I ate their frozen burger patties. Oh, look at this. Look at this packaging. Again, if you're not watching the YouTube, miss out. At the bottom here, it says, Bubba says you'll never bite a burger better than a Bubba.
I don't even know what that means. I need that t-shirt right now. I need that t-shirt. Someone get a hold of it. I'll pay for it. I need that t-shirt. That phrase alone.
Continue on, Bubba, with your burger.
And last year coming off 29 home runs in Miami, of all places, 34 the year before when he left the White Sox into Miami. We were all excited about him last year. Three straight 250 seasons. Chris Davis says sup to Berger on that one. And I just, how do you not love the move from Miami to Texas to top it off? It's an outrageous Rangers lineup. They are building a slow pitch softball team there right now. It's just stacked from top to bottom. Runs should be a plenty in Texas. Jake Berger should play every day, barring the occasional day off. I love everything about him. And when you're looking at projections, Steamer's got him for 28 and a 243 average. So obviously the average is low if we believe in trends. But another guy that I see 30-plus home runs, and it just, I guess, depends on who drives in the runs in Texas. But he's another one of those guys. We saw Jonah Heim at one time get over 100 RBIs. Berger could put 100 RBIs up if he's in the right place at the right time. So he is a fun one to take a chance on. He could be a mini Pete Alonso when things are all said and done. And we could look at this at the end of the season, and if Pete just plays mediocre or struggles just a little bit, or even Matt Olson, if we want to go there, Jake Berger could be that dude going a lot later with an ADP right now of, 121.
I still have Bubba Berger up. You can't see the sheet.
I got the ADP up. But yeah, Berger I love quite a bit.
And I think the one thing I'll add with Jake Berger, full agree. I would have picked Berger if I wasn't late to the dock here. I think the projections are, and they have to, they're computer systems. They're weighing that first half, I think, as they should, and or as they normally would. And I don't think they should. I think that first half from Jake Berger was pretty much marred by a muscle strain that he had, like intercostal. And hit 217 the first 3 months of the season with seven home runs. Once he was actually healthy in the second half after July 1st, hit 278 with 22 home runs. He almost is hitting his home run projection in the second half of last year. And so, I don't think you can multiply that second half times two kind of a deal. I think that's cherry picking. But I think you can certainly weigh that second half more than you can the first half. And then, like you said, man, if you tack on the lineup improvement going to Texas, this is a smash.
Yeah, like I'm surprised. Like he's gone as high as 109 over the last 10 drafts. So he's getting closer to that pocket we talked about that we like of those four, like Walker, Naylor, Bellinger, Pascantino. So he's starting to get drafted in that range. Like there's a world where I could see come March, he's going even higher. Like I think there's a real discussion point where if we get more set in stone, like, hey, Berger's hitting cleanup every day or hitting fifth every day, that number I think is going to climb even more. We might see him going around, or I don't know if he goes in front of Christian Walker, but he might be going right around Christian Walker when all things are said and done. It's only 20 picks, but that makes a big difference come draft day.
It's just crazy how different, how high we are in Berger. The steamer projection and the ADP is the exact same with Berger and Casas. Look at that. 28 home runs, two steals, exactly the same, and 243 versus 245 batting average and 1 ADP. Like they are the exact same. However, me and you could not be further apart on these two, or further in agreement on how far apart these two guys are.
I guess
you may like Casas more than me. I don't know, but
I do like Casas. I just don't trust Casas. And there's two things. One is the situation for Berger is primo, not bad for Casas, but primo for Berger. I think just not, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but the way we think, Berger's done it 2 years in a row. Casas hasn't. Casas hasn't proven, like, we know the skills are there, but he hasn't proven he can do this yet. And we take our chances when we want to, but if you're literally drafting player A and player B, I think we usually gravitate to the guy that's done it before.
And I'll just add in, did you mention third base eligibility as well?
I did not. That's another great point, okay, as well, yes.
That's another, just, again, nothing huge because it's corner to corner, but any little bit helps there.
Yes, for sure. All right, who's your next one on the list? You could pair him with Mount Massey.
All right, so Mount Massey has his first base equivalent of Ryan Mountcastle, who's going 245. This is more, again, an indictment. He's the 19th first baseman off the board. Ryan Mountcastle is with a 257 projection with 20 home runs. I just like it. You're getting very desperate at this point in the draft, looking for maybe a late corner infield person. I think Ryan Mountcastle, even though he only hit, how many home runs did he hit last year? Like 13?
Yep. But they moved the fence season. In, man. They moved the fence in.
13 home runs over 500 plate appearances. Like, it was bad for Ryan Mountcastle, but the barrel rate was still okay, 9%. If you look at the previous three seasons, it's been 12, 15, 12%. This is a guy who hit 33 home runs back in 2021. He's still 28 years old. They have moved the wall in. The lineup's great. I think Ryan Mountcastle, for as much as Baltimore likes to kind of screw around with their lineup, I think he's pretty locked in as their first baseman. So for all those reasons, and again, the price, I think, like, I don't know if there's much of a difference between Mountcastle, the projection says there isn't, and like Paul Goldschmidt going 175. So, and I don't hate Goldschmidt this year. I just think Mountcastle is one of those few buys that that makes sense to me this late at first base.
Yeah, Mountcastle's been a guy I've targeted as a corner infielder as things go on. Michael Bush is going after him. I don't mind as a corner infielder as well. So those are two guys I've looked at. I like Mountcastle more than Michael Bush. So I don't hate it. It's a guy, like, I don't want to leave with him as my first baseman, but as a corner infielder, and there's upside there, as some might hate to hear that word, but I think it's definitely apart. And as a good podcaster as you are, you mentioned a segue here to oldie Paul Goldschmidt, who's my guy, ADP 175 right now. Goldie just signed with the Yankees, coming off 22 homers, 11 steals, 245 average. Average was down compared to recent years. Power kind of got back. Steals were still there. This is a guy that we saw some market improvements as the season went on, which is obviously very, very nice to see. Like, if you're just talking first half, second half, we saw him hit 271 in the second half compared to 230. He had 9 home runs over 62 games compared to 13 over 92 games. So the power was better, the average was better, and those are things we wanted to see as the season went on, because it was pretty bleak for Paul Goldschmidt at one point in time. But again, things got much, much better. Heck, we saw a 210 ISO in the second half compared to 143, a 120 WRC plus. Like, you give me a 120 WRC plus in the Yankees lineup, the run production would be tremendous. Right now they got him projected to hit fourth. I think that's a little aggressive, but you never know. That's an interesting lineup. So it makes sense in a weird way, but I don't see it happening. But you give me a 250 to 260 average, he's going to hit you 25 home runs probably, and the run production could be huge while throwing in steals. He's one of the last guys that gets you steals. Like, there's a couple more guys, but I think Goldie you can pretty much count on as long as the Yankees still want to run, which they do with most of their guys. So, yeah, I'm an Oldie fan now. I have got quite a few shares of him already, which is pretty scary. But that, at that ADP, like you mentioned, the drop-off from Berger and Casas, like 121, 122 to 175 at Goldie. We're talking 50 picks. I definitely will take my shots on Goldie, who actually is projected for a higher batting average, slightly fewer home runs, and more steals than Casas and Berger. So not that far off from the overall projections between the two, and goes to a nice Yankee Stadium situation.
Yep. I think it was like the beginning of the end for Goldschmidt, really the end of the end for Goldschmidt halfway through last season. It was nice to see him turn that around. And then obviously the Yankees are, I still think they make some pretty smart signings. And so it's not full in Yankees we trust, of course, but it was nice to see that move to Yankee Stadium. So I like the Goldschmidt pick. I like him better than Toglia, who's going 10 picks after. Luis Arraez, don't get me started. We'll talk about him in the second base episode. Yandy Diaz is fine. Christian Encarnacion Strand's going a little bit later than Goldschmidt, but like I think Goldschmidt kind of stands out as the cream of the crop for that like third tier once you start approaching pick 200.
Yep, 100% on board with you there. All right, let's talk ADPs 21 and beyond. So deep, deep targets here, Ryan. Who are a couple you are looking at?
Who I got? Tyler Soderstrom is one of mine. I think the power for Soderstrom, the projection's 231 with 24 home runs, two steals. I think Soderstrom has 30 plus home run power. I believe I had his forecaster box. It's funny how like quickly I forget. I did have his forecaster box, and I put an upside. I trust me, I am very old. I put an upside of 30 home runs on Tyler Soderstrom. This is a guy, 15% barrel rate, like excellent, excellent power metrics. Like, yes, the strikeout rate, the batting average is bad, but like the K rate isn't terrible, terrible. It's not Toglia-esque. So I think like there's hope that Soderstrom could hit 240, 245 with that power and the K rate. And so when you're going at pick 300, I'll take a shot at that.
Yeah, no, I don't mind that one. I remember picking up in multiple places last season for the power upside there in Sacramento now this upcoming season. One for me is Jonathan Aranda of the Tampa Bay Rays. It's kind of a now or never situation. Going to be 27 years old, should DH or play first base, depending on what they do at the first base position. As if you listen to Jason Collette, Yandy Diaz might get traded at some point in time, so there's things to think about when it comes to Tampa Bay. And Aranda's a guy that, prospect-wise, had a good hit tool, hasn't really panned out full-time in his short chances. Played well in, I believe he's in the Dominican, one of the winter leagues right now. He's hitting the ball really well there, again, the winter league, so grain of salt. But nice to see the young kid going out there and trying to improve, which is a plus. So if he just runs into enough playing time, there's a guy that's got, maybe he can run into 15 home runs if he gets there. Batting average would be my biggest question with him. Projections are low on him, but an ADP of 335, I think he's worth a dart. I think there's a lot of upside there with a guy like Aranda, and I'll take some chances on him if I'm looking for a third first baseman per se in a DC.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just real quick on the other Tampa first baseman, Yandy Diaz, just recommend listening to that Collette show with Tampa Bay. Jason Collette made a very good point about Yandy Diaz's oppo power, which could play quite well as long as he is a Ray. That's the other question, but could play quite well at Steinbrenner Field in 2025.
Most definitely. Who's your next guy who I've got a decent amount of shares of so far?
I guess hometown pick here, PNW pick. It's going to be Luke Raley. I really like the power speed from Luke Raley. He is a pure platoon bat, but I think this could be like a Jock Jams type that's going super late, like a little bit different profile. There's a lot more speed with Luke Raley than there is with Jock Peterson. But he's not going to play against lefties, but that's not the end of the world, right? Like, and the ADP is super cheap for Luke Raley. So I think the playing time is going to be, he might even hit cleanup in Seattle. Like which would be like behind Rosarena and Julio. So like even though Seattle is death to hitters, like the team context right around Luke Raley isn't bad, and Seattle will run him. So I like, if you're looking for a power speed combination at first base, I think Luke Raley is good. Even though the playing time won't be full, you're gonna have to use him in spots and manage that weekly or daily or whatever. And the batting average won't be that great, but at least you've got two pretty good power speed categories there.
And what's also nice with Raley compared to Jock is Jock's util only, where Raley's at the first base outfield. So that's a big plus as well.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. For me, and I was telling Ryan before the show, there's actually a decent amount of later first basemen that I like taking darts on compared to other positions, right? Especially third, first baseman, maybe even fourths, depending on your DC strategy. But this one for me is Josh Bell. I'm a big fan of this ADP. Over the last 10 drafts, ADP is 369. He's gone as high as 322. I expect it to go up. But Bell just signed with the Washington Nationals, which is a team that's a broken record, but big fan of what they're doing with this lineup, with these young kids. I got a ton of Kyber Ruiz, talked about that already. We're going to wax poetic about Luis Garcia Jr. On the second base preview. But Josh Bell, as much of a guy that gets moved a lot, but via trades, free agents, you name it, he's played at least 143 games in every year but 2020 since 2017. So he plays rather consistently, like 600-plus plate appearances every year since 2020. Not bad for that kind of an ADP. 19 home runs last year. He's had 17 or more in the last 4 years, six of the last seven, not including 2020. Run productions, you know, not horrible, again, for the ADP, and he hits you around 250, 245, 250. Like, it's a steady, consistent, boring profile, but he's been very, very good, and the Nats are going to run him out there like crazy because they're either going to surprise the world and win games, or they're going to run him out there so they can trade him. Like, it's a one-year deal. He's going to get plenty of playing time, so I am a big Josh Bell fan in this situation.
Hot take could be that Josh Bell is more productive than Nathaniel Lowe going much earlier on the same team. The projections like low because of the playing time, but if you look at the per plate appearance, they're basically the same guy. Yeah, and yeah, I think if you're right, yep. And if he does DH first base, whatever, and play full time like you think, I think that's gonna work. And yeah, man, I know we've brought this up, but like CJ Abrams, Dylan Cruz, James Wood, Nathaniel Lowe, Josh Bell, Luis Garcia, Kiber Ruiz. That's seven out of the nine Nationals. It's a hitters. Decent, it's pretty good.
Decent lineup, man. It's getting there. Like, they've built through the trades very well, like the Juan Soto trades. And like, they've put together a squad. It's interesting. I just want to throw this out there, though, because like Uncle Ted said, Carlos Santana, I almost put him down. He's another guy. It's just as steady as they come. He's going about almost 20 picks ahead of Josh Bell these days, but he's another one. I've always been a Nolan Chanwal fan. Who knows where Rhys Hoskins signs? Andrew Vaughn is boring but consistent as heck. Mm-hmm. So just my point, that's just a few. I could keep going. There are a handful of guys I do not mind taking chances on down here at first base. So like it's one of those DC strategies. You just take one really good one and then just wait and take a couple of these late guys and see what hits and roll the dice instead of playing on that middle ground. That could be interesting as well.
You could. I mean, another name, Uncle Ted's been throwing him out there in the chat, but Kyle Manzardo, who will not start the season at first base, eligible at least. He's UT only for now, and I don't know when he eventually – I think he eventually gets first base. I just don't know when.
Ricardo Santana gets out of the way.
Yeah, but that could be an option if you're doing like a draft and hold and want to plan for the second half of the season at first base. Kyle Manzardo, I would think he gets first base eligibility by the second half, and he's quite cheap as well.
Yep, I'm with you. So yeah, it's an interesting position, like pretty top 10 heavy, give or take, maybe top, you could maybe argue top 14 or so if you really want to. Then it gets dicey, but then there's some options late that I wouldn't be surprised if things show up. So what are your final thoughts on the position before we get to some listener questions? That was kind of my, I guess, roundabout way of giving a final thought on what I think about the position.
Sure. Yeah. Just to wrap it, I'm fine taking the top three, any of the top three, Vlad, Harper, Freeman, even though the cost is steep. I'm probably passing on Olson and Alonso. I am then all in on Christian Walker, Naylor, Bellinger, Vinny P going between 100 and 115. I am also in on Jake Berger at 120. I loop him into that group. And I think you need to get your first baseman by that time. I think, you know, while you made a good case for Goldschmidt, I've laid out the case for Mountcastle. I think definitely in 12 teamers, I think that needs to be your corner infield and not your first baseman.
Very, very true. I agree with you.
And don't draft that. Tristan Casas.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one to clip and look back on later on.
I know.
Not saying you're wrong, but that's one of those that I could see backfiring tremendously as well. He's got a wide range, let's put it that way.
Hey, that's the life of being a famous fantasy baseball podcaster. You know, it just comes back to bite you. You said it. Yeah.
All right, I got some listener questions here. First one from the chat here. Tom DeCola says, East Coaster here and work comes early. Question for you guys for end of your preview. Who do you each see from First Bank's ranked 11 through 30 moving into the top 10? And who in the top 10 can you see dropping out? So a deeper guy going into the top 10, Jake Berger. No, I was kidding. And who do you see dropping out? But who, I'll give it to you. Who do you think?
Who do I see dropping out of the top 10?
Who do you see coming into the top 10 from 11 through 30?
I would say I will go Mountcastle. I'll stick with Mountcastle.
Okay. I guess I should probably say Goldie to not – Berger to me is the easiest answer. But
yeah, Berger is the obvious. I
believe in Goldie. I really do. I think this situation plays well for him, which if anybody listens to our show, you know, that's pretty interesting for me to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the one who did the beer bet.
Goldie versus Walker.
Goldie versus Christian Walker last year. So
it ended well, as expected. Who in the top 10 do you see not finishing in the top 10?
See, that's a little bit tougher, but I will go Spencer Steer. I'll cheat a little bit. Technically, he's 11th, but I'm going to put Salvador Perez at catcher. So I'll cheat a little bit.
I was going to say Salvador Perez.
And actually, Tristan Casas is going one pick later than Steer, so he's basically a top 10. I'll go Tristan Casas. I'm making my own damn rules.
You are just setting that one in stone right now. For me... Ooh, do you want to really rock some boats here?
It's tough. These guys all have good floors, I feel like, in the top 10 first base.
They really do. I'm going to go Cody Bellinger.
Okay.
All right. I almost went real bold and said Josh Naylor, but I can't do that. We're going to go Cody Bellinger on that one.
So. I mean, he has shown a similar collapse in the past multiple times. So.
All right, a couple more listener questions here. Wave Boy says, Casas versus Vinny P versus Naylor with Naylor in his new environment. How do you have that ranked? Casas, Vinny P, Naylor.
I'll go Naylor, Vinny P, Casas.
I'm going to go Vinny P, Naylor, Casas.
Yeah. Naylor, Vinny P, very close for me. Casas, obviously not. But. Yep.
BP at futures_bet says, Spencer Steer's return to the Bloom Boards. The unofficial start to the preseason. He's pretty excited about that. I have Steer as a cheap keeper in a 14-team mixed league, and I love the league, and I love the position flexibility. His power projection seems real light to me. You guys agree?
I mostly agree, yeah. Spencer Steer, I think I'll speak for you, mostly a blind spot for both of us. We were both wrong on Spencer Steer last year. I still don't really know what to do with Spencer Steer for 2025, but projections look decent. He plays all the time. Cincinnati, I was worried about playing time last year with Steer. I think that concern is no longer valid, and the park is great. So, and he runs. I mean, he is the projected stolen base leader at first base. So a cheap keeper price on Spencer Steer, Oregon Duck Spencer Steer is probably a good place to be, even though I just like have some weird, I don't want to say bias against him, but I'll stick with blind spot for him.
Yep. Richard Sands says, in DC's first base thins out in a hurry, and after 600, you're left with the Rizzos and Sheets of the world. Do you like them? And who else do you like at first base very late? Are you a Rizzo or Sheets guy? Rizzo doesn't have a team right now. So are you freaking
with Sheets? I bag Sheets pretty hard in the...
In the forecaster.
So I let off the thing. It said last year we said there are better options for fantasy managers and big league teams about Sheets. And I said the Chicago White Sox said, hold my beer. And then I completely demolished Sheets. So yeah, I don't like either of them. And Rizzo just unfortunately, like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, like, I feel like not, the skills. Like, yeah. Skills should be there, but he's just not the same since that concussion at all.
Exactly. It's unfortunate.
Justin Morneau-esque, unfortunately.
Yep.
For me, if I have to give him a guy post 600, I wrote about him in the Playing Time tomorrow for the American League West, and that is Zach DiCenzo of the Houston Astros. there is a path to playing time there. If they, I mentioned in that article, in the winter leagues, they're playing him in the outfield just as often as they play him in the infield. He can play first base, he can play third base, and they're working on making him an outfielder, which Houston needs some more outfield help with. Right now, he's first base only, so that's a dart post 600 I don't hate. And the other one I'll mention is Mark Canha played very well with the Giants. He's unsigned right now, but you'd imagine he'd land somewhere like the Francis of the world and those guys. If wherever Canha lands, should see enough playing time with that ADP, that might be worth a dart.
I'll add Justin Turner as well. Yeah. Currently homeless, but if he signs, I think you're in good shape there for another decent year of Justin Turner for as long as he's healthy. Again, going super late.
It's pretty crazy. Like Carlos Santana was going, I don't know if he's 600, but at least 500s last year. And yeah, now people are like, okay, he does this every year. Now I don't care how old he is. Like, we're going to draft him in the 320s now. Like, it's just, I'm not saying they're wrong. I think it's very fair, but it's just funny how things change so much year to year with these older players, that situation and consistency. And Turner is just as consistent. He doesn't have as much power, but still a hitting machine. So don't hate that at all. All right, we're going to wrap it up there, Ryan. Any other final thoughts? We already wrapped up the position, but any other final thoughts before we head out of here? Just for those keeping track at home, we already pre-recorded second base because I'm leaving town tomorrow afternoon to do some fun stuff with the little one. We'll be back live with you twice next week and for now, for the foreseeable future. But you know, that's recorded. But any final thoughts?
Have fun. I was going to say good luck on your trip, but that doesn't really make sense. Have fun on your trip. And I guess good luck with little ones. You always need some good luck when you're especially coming off coming off winter break. So that's about all I got. We will get back to our pretty normal cadence of twice per week live. We're always doing twice a week shows, but twice a week live, I think we'll start to settle down a little bit here next coming week. So looking forward to cranking out these last few position previews. And I don't know, join the Patreon. It's fun. The Discord's a ton of fun.
Yep.
It's been awesome.
It's been a blast. So thank you all for making that a thing. And thank you all for listening. Again, pre-recorded, ready for you. Second base dropping for you Thursday night. Back with you guys next week. Listener leagues, awesome prizes. Baseball HQ, thank you. We're going to have some fun with that. But until next time, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intric. And for now, this was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 202. Catch y'all next time.